When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Something Rhymes with Purple. This is a podcast all about words, if you don't know it already, and it is presented by me, Susie Dent, and my lovely co-host, who I can see in a tiny box on my screen.
I'm Giles Brandreth, and I'm excited to see you. You've actually filled the whole of my screen. Am I only a tiny little box in yours?
Well, it depends. When you speak, then the whole screen fills with your presence, but otherwise you're just a little box, I'm afraid.
How amazing. With you, you fill the whole screen all the time.
Okay.
How are your dreams, speaking of filling the whole screen all the time? Are you dreaming okay?
Still really vivid, because we talked about this at the beginning of lockdown, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, when they were incredibly vivid. You had a dream about your mum reading you a story. Yeah, still very vivid, but actually much more obvious this time. So yeah. Any kind of anxieties I have, I mean, they're pretty much replicated in my dreams. How about you?
I'm back to my cliche dreams. I'm regularly seeing the Queen in my dreams. And I'm not alone. Apparently millions of people, you know, dream about the Queen.
What is she doing?
Well, she's doing all sorts of things. In my case, we were having tea and the Duke of Edinburgh got a bit grumpy.
Jealous?
And then I woke up. Yeah. But what I wonder is who does the Queen dream about? If we dream
you,
about
clearly.
Her. Well, wouldn't that be exciting?
Do you know, that's another interesting thing. I was just saying to a friend yesterday that there was a certain period in lockdown. I think it was after the initial massive stress where nobody knew what was going on, when actually we were forced to be quiet and pretty much tucked away in our houses. And I slept brilliantly for about 6 weeks. My sleep was the best it's been in years. Oh. And now that everything is... it's not back to normal, but, you know, it's so busy everywhere. Back to insomnia. Between 2 and 5 is my absolute black hole.
Let me tell you about my living nightmare, because it's relevant to what we're going to talk about today.
Mm.
In 1997, I was a Member of Parliament, and the young Jeremy Vine, He was then reporting for a programme like Panorama or Newsnight. He came to my constituency, a marginal constituency, to follow me for the day with a television crew from the BBC. And we did the interview, and then he said, well, where are you going next? I said, I'm going to the local football club to support Chester City. He said, oh, can we come too? I said, of course. So they got into my car, and I drove towards the football ground. But I'd been the Member of Parliament for 5 years. I'd never been to the football ground before.
Right.
I couldn't find it. I could not find it. And there was a BBC film crew filming me as I got more and more lost, going around my own constituency looking for Chester City, having boasted how I supported them. I had no idea whether they were up in the league, down in the league, what division they were in, who was the captain. It was terrible. And he could see that I was getting more and more lost. And I said, well, I wanted you to see some of the sights of the beautiful city of Chester. This is my way. Yeah, I know this is the cathedral. It was before sat-nav. It was ghastly. Eventually, we got there, but too late for the beginning of the match.
Oh.
We arrived late. And I ran in, I ran up the stairs, and I came out on the wrong side. I didn't realize there was a home side and a visiting side. I didn't know about that. I'd never been to a football match before. And then the announcer, seeing me arrive, made some sarcastic remark in the middle of the game, saying, oh, look who's here, the Member of Parliament for the City of Chester, coming up on the visitor's side. I could see I was going to lose my seat, and I did lose my seat, and all this was recorded by the BBC.
Do you think that's why, that single moment in time?
No, of course no. I don't. I was going to lose anyway. But it was a terrible event.
Yeah.
And I then dreamt about it. And occasionally, part of that episode does come up in my dreams as an anxiety dream.
Yeah. I'm surprised you're not naked in the away side, because that would sort of, you know, fulfill every cliche of a bad dream.
But it's not a comedy. It's a nightmare. If I was naked, people would be falling about laughing.
That does sound absolutely awful. But you're right. We're going to talk about football today. And you already said once, before we started recording, you said, you carry this one, Susie, because I know nothing about football. And you've just confirmed that fact to me. I, on the other hand, love football. I'm an Arsenal supporter, almost exclusively, because of Arsene Wenger, who I have adored for a very long time.
Was he born and bred at wherever Arsenal lives? Where does Arsenal? Highbury, is it Highbury?
Yes, Highbury in Islington. Arsene is, if I'm allowed to call him that, is from Alsace.
Did he get the name because the job because he's called Arsene and it's Arsenal?
No.
It's just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence. I mean, we won't go into his achievements, which were just extraordinary. He was one of the best football managers in living history. But he's just so interesting. And part of the reason why I have such a huge brain crush on Arsene Wenger is he, you know how you always hear about a friend of a friend who sat next to him at a dinner party or sat next to someone he admired at a dinner party. Anyway, apparently he did. He and the lady sitting next to him had a lovely conversation over dinner about, you know, what they were interested in, what they did, etc. He was asking her so many questions about her job, and only right at the end of the dinner, after an hour and a half, she said to him, well, what do you do? And he said, I manage Arsenal Football Club. But at no point had he said, you don't know who I am, or do you know who I am? This is what I do.
Well done.
Yeah, he's just like a great man.
Can I say, I was intrigued by the phrase you used there, brain crush. Is that a dentism?
Possibly.
Have you not had
brain crushes on people?
No. And what does it mean, as opposed to him being candy for the... He's candy for the mind, not for the eye.
Exactly. Although, I mean, I'm sure he's incredibly charismatic and sexy, etc. But it's just his mind that I am in love with. I interviewed him for a book that I wrote on tribal vocabulary. And so I was writing about the vocabulary of the football crowd, the football fans, the football managers, the football players, etc. And he very kindly granted me an interview. But unfortunately, it was via email and via a proxy. So there was a middleman involved.
Oh.
But still, he was lovely. And I know he watches Countdown, and he wrote me a lovely letter for my 25th Countdown anniversary, which meant the world.
Well, that's marvellous. But I mean, an interview via email and with a middleman.
Listen, I'll tell you what I can get.
It's like safe sex inside a sack, isn't it? I mean, how ridiculous can you get?
Anyway, we better get on to football because there is a lot to say.
Please. First of all, can you tell us about the word football and the word soccer? Because we have a lot of international listeners. Give us the genesis of those two words.
Well, football history, first of all, is a mile deep, and it's centuries long as well. So we know that Henry VIII owned a pair of football boots. And in fact, he also outlawed football because he thought at some point that it was said to be a distraction from the important military pursuits of archery and horse riding, etc. That's just how old it is. And the Football Association was founded in about 1863. And that was in order to get together a codified set of rules for the game. That also enabled the various city clubs to compete against each other, etc. But also, importantly, it was to distinguish football from other forms of games with a ball, especially rugby. The sport was officially known as association football, and so that association was naturally shortened to soccer, just as rugby football is shortened to rugger. And association football, the popularity grew around the world, and it came to be shortened to just football in many countries and soccer in others. So in Germany, for example, you have Fußball. You have Football in Spain, a terrible pronunciation. But in North America, the American and Canadian versions of football presided, really. And both of those games were derived from rugby in the 19th century. So soccer was retained to avoid confusion with rugby. Does that make sense? So actually, the important thing to remember is that soccer was actually a British term and not originally North American.
And soccer is a diminution of the word association.
Yes. Yes. With, instead of the soft C, you have the hard C. I just find the whole subject fascinating, but I also find it fascinating what happens to people when they go to a football match. So I haven't been to huge numbers of games, but I've been to as many as I can. And there is something quite both scary and just phenomenal about being in a football stadium. And this is where the true, do you remember, I think I've talked before about the real origin of the word fan. It's a shortening of fanatic, obviously. And it goes back to meaning belonging to the temple and so inspired by a god. And then it took on the kind of frantic and manic behaviour of someone who was possessed by a god and so was a bit unhinged and an enemy of the people. I find that quite appropriate because the god of football really inspires every emotion imaginable. And in fact, people used to talk about going down to the temple when they were going to see a football match. So, you know, that whole sort of religious sense has been really, really kept. And then there's the swearing. I mean, we've talked about swearing in our swearing episode, but the language is extraordinary. And again, that's got a link with religion because profanity, profane means outside the temple. A fanum was a temple.
Can I stop you there? Profanity, is this a tradition in football? I didn't think there was any profanity. I mean, I know occasionally people will swear, but is that part and parcel of the ritual of a football game?
Oh, massively.
Really?
Yeah, even in the family section, I have to say. Yeah, I mean, you can't protect your kids from the language around, unfortunately.
When did this start? Because the great footballer who I met, and I'm sure I've mentioned him before, it was Sir Stanley Matthews, hugely famous, maybe the first footballer to be knighted, I don't know, but a very distinguished gentleman. When I met him, he was an old man. Mm. But the world he described to me of football when he started playing, when he was, I think, paid £5 a week, and he was the most famous player in the world, I don't think bad language was part of it. I know there's a sort of spirit in the grounds,
but
why are you're speaking of it as though you almost approve of it?
Well, there's something about a football stadium that takes you outside the confines of normal society.
Are they chanting things? What?
Well, the referee is often on the receiving end. So he's often called the wanker in the black, often.
And people shout this out, do they?
Yes. It shows the good and the bad sides of humanity.
You're making me realise why I'm quite glad I've ever been to a football match.
There's also real maleness about the language of the football crowd. So there's a huge number of women present, obviously a huge number of women playing, but the calls are all kind of resolutely masculine, I would say. And even the C word barely gets a stare these days. So it's a codified vitriol, really. It's fairly intrinsic to the game. But this isn't the reason why I love football matches. The language of football, I mean, where do you start? You've got the moves for a start. So
tell me about the moves.
You know about nutmegging?
I know nothing. I know they run forward and they run. I know there are 11 of them. I know there's a centre forward. What is nutmegging?
So to nutmeg is to pass the ball through the opposition player's legs.
Oh.
And it's said to go back to nutmeg, which used to be slang for testicles. We talk about nuts and we used to talk about nutmegs as well. So basically through the leg, under the nutmegs.
I thought this was going to be a family-friendly, let's talk about soccer episode. It turns out it's all about vile language and people breaking their testicles in the nutmeg.
It's not all about it. I started off with that one because it seemed a natural extension. You're like the pee roller, a ball with so little power that you and I might kick at the goal. It safely ends up in the hands of the goalkeeper. That's a pee roller.
Oh, because it's like a little pee. It's going so slowly.
Yes.
Rolling across up the plate.
You've got the Cruyff turn, which you definitely won't have heard of.
I've heard of Johan Cruyff.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because I've read the papers. I know these people are world famous.
Yes, this was his move. The attacker changes direction by playing the ball behind his standing foot, leaving the defender facing the wrong direction. That's the Cruyff turn, best illustrated on YouTube, I have to say. There's the Panenka as well, named after Antonin Panenka. He scored a goal for Czechoslovakia in European Cup final. But it's brilliant. It's a penalty kick. So the taker runs up with huge speed as if they're going to leather the ball. But instead, they give it the tiniest, dainty little kick. And then the goalie's completely bamboozled then.
What about the Ribena? I've heard about the Ribena.
The Ribena?
Isn't that a move?
I'm not. The Ribena. What's that one?
It's actually a Rabona. I was trying to be amusing.
Yes, that apparently is Spanish for playing truant. And so it's the idea of playing hooky. So basically you cross your legs as you make that move. But I like the idea. You're bringing a bit of decorum to the football match.
I'm trying to raise the tone. I don't want, we've won awards. I don't want us to be eliminated from the competition. Look, I'm taking one for the team today. I've heard that expression. What does that mean?
Take one for the team just means you're normally given a yellow or a red card because you make a really terrible tackle, but it was necessary in order to stop a goal or a quick advance on the goal.
How many phrases like taking one for the team and red card, yellow card have gone from the world of soccer, football, into general currency?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Quite a few. But what I found when I was looking at the language of football is that it moves much less quickly than other sports. So, I mean, all the idioms and things that have been taken from boxing or from baseball, from golf even. With football, they tend to be the cliches, but they don't move very fast. So you will find sick as a parrot. We talked about that, didn't we, with citicism the other day and psittacosis. Citicism, the unnecessary repetition of words, and psittacosis being a disease, horrible disease suffered by parrots. So sick as a parrot referred to a player that just was mortified by something that they'd done. Early doors.
What does early doors mean? It's over early.
Yeah, early doors. Actually, early doors has slipped into English, hasn't it? So I think that actually slipped into football from rugby, but it just means, it's over early
before
doors.
You've started.
Yeah. You've got a hospital pass. A hospital pass is a dangerous ball that's passed under pressure. So it involves the recipient coming under heavy attack, basically. So you know that loads of defenders are going to lunge at this person that's receiving the ball. If any of these I have got wrong, by the way, I would love it if our listeners could let me know, because sometimes I think I've slightly misinterpreted it just from how I see things. But there's codes as well amongst players, which I like. So players on the pitch might shout, "Sid!" And that's a code between players of the same team that the ball should be left for them. So apparently, even though the opposition understand it now, it still works. If it's like saying, "Mine, leave it, I've got it."
What's the origin of Sid?
Don't know. I just couldn't find it out. I don't know who Sid was. It would be great to find out, but I genuinely don't know.
You're introducing me to a brave new world. And to see, if I may say so, I can see Susie and she's salivating. I've seen her drinking a cup
of peppermint tea, to be honest, guys.
I haven't seen her so flush for a while. This is a subject that is close to her heart. It's almost squeaky bum time. I've heard that. But what does that mean? I've heard a lot of these expressions, I've never understood and I've never dared admit. I didn't understand them.
Well,
what
is squeaky bum? You're agitated and you're nervously shifting about on your seat. So you're squeaking the chair as you shift about. And boy, the nerves amongst football fans is just quite extraordinary. What else have you got? You've got the mixer. The mixer is the penalty area. So to put it in the mixer is to get it in the box. The onion bag is the goalpost because it looks like an onion bag.
Mm-hmm, I can see that.
Cheese sandwich is, I like this. So cheese sandwich is a player who's not firmly anchored to any particular position. And do you know why it's called a cheese sandwich?
No.
It's a riff on the idea of a free roll.
Ooh.
I like that. Parking the bus.
Parking the bus?
Yes. Government ministers are often accused of parking the bus. So that's another one that slipped from football into mainstream language.
What does it mean?
So it basically means all 11 players get behind the ball to defend it because they've done enough, they feel, and all they need to do is to avoid an opposition goal going in. Okay. So they park the bus. The magic sponge. So you will know about diving in football.
Oh, you mean taking a fall when you actually are not being hurt? And then I've seen clips of this, of them rolling around, holding their shin, and they're buying time or something, are they?
Not just buying time, but hoping to get a free kick or a penalty or the other team, you know, a red card or whatever. So to
this
go...
This game now seems to be full of cheats. Not only people who use bad language, they cheat. I'm not liking this world at all.
I've just thought of another example, actually, of the kind of fanaticism that it inspires, which is a friend whose dad was a massive Man City supporter and was also a minister at the weekend, so a kind of non-stipendiary minister. And under his cassock or under his vestments, he would wear the Man City kit. And even he, whilst watching a football game, would be happy when a member of the opposition fell down hurt and had to be taken off. And I just didn't get that. I did not understand how anyone could be happy that someone else was hurt. But this is what happens. It's that level. It's a bit like a gladiatorial match in Roman times. It's very little different. The baying of the audience, the kind of wish for death. I'm not painting a very pretty picture.
No, you're not. I mean,
I
know
pretty.
In Victorian times when we had public executions, 10,000 people would turn up to see somebody swing. And now they're going to the football.
Yes, well, it's similar kind of emotions. Anyway, going back to diving, some people refer, rather tongue-in-cheek, to the magic sponge, and that's the kind of apparently miraculous use of a wet sponge by a medic to kind of cure the person who's fallen to the ground in agony. Its lexicon doesn't move very fast, but every football fan will kind of know it.
And also, there are phrases that I'm using without realising they come from the world of football. At the end of the day, you couldn't make it up. They think it's all over. It is now. These are all phrases first used, I think, by commentators.
Yeah, by commentators or by managers. Now, I did ask specifically, Wenger, why are managers so kind of reliant on, you know, fatigued formulae or have such a limited repertoire of adjectives? And he said, in our defence, we're restricted not because we're short of intelligence, but because we don't want to cause damage. We're always cautious not to cause huge problems with what we say in press conferences. So we're always tempted to use the same words. We were not rewarded. We were unlucky. The ref's decision didn't go our way. We fought well today, because if you let yourself go, you could be in trouble. And one man who famously lets himself go is Jose Mourinho.
I think we've almost had our first half. When I played football at school, at this point, we went to the sort of edge of the field and we sucked at an orange. Don't ask me why. We were given half an orange to suck. Do they still do that?
Or do they take drugs at halftime? Sophisticated sports drinks now.
Oh, do they?
It'd be nice if they had a few oranges.
And then after the break, I want to know why Arsenal is called Arsenal. And lots of these clubs have nicknames of one kind or another.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
Also from Something Else.
Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. Join Katie for a series of powerful and inspirational conversations with people who have triumphed over adversity, with guests including Fern Cotton.
And what about when you get really lazy journalism? So like people that draw just one line, they take it out of context, and that's really sad because...
It is. I've also been on the receiving end of it so many times. Sometimes to really tragic levels for me where I've really not felt able to cope with it.
Yeah.
Zoe Sugg and Nadia Hussein. I think the thing with women, firstly, is that women sometimes don't always like to see other women succeed.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of that, and I think that's why it's really hard sometimes, because in the last 4 years, I've changed so much. Mm.
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.
Welcome back to Something Rhymes with Purple. I'm Giles Brereth, and Susie Dent is giving me a masterclass on the world of football, where it's not quite as I thought it was, but that's because I don't know anything about it. The only footballers of any note that I've met are David Beckham, Sir Stanley Matthews, and George Best.
Wow, I know they are.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big triple whammy. Wow. I met George Best in a bar in about 1970 in Dublin, and we got on famously. I was then chatting to a beautiful young actress called Sinead Cusack, and I thought to show off, since I knew George Best, I introduced her to George Best. And then, having got on terribly well with her for the beginning of the evening, she disappeared, and she copped off with George Best, left me standing.
Yeah. I thought, did you not marry Jeremy Irons?
She's married now to Jeremy Irons. Yes, indeed. This was a pre-marital encounter. Wow. It's in the public domain. I think she ended up on the front page of the News of the World the following Sunday. And I introduced them. There you go.
But some great, great quotes from George Best, which we don't have time for. But one day, should we do a podcast about quotes, great quotations?
Because, I'd love to do that. Yeah. He was a delightful person, I have to say.
Yeah.
And he didn't talk about football. He was just amusing and fun to be with. And I'm sorry that he had a terrifying problem with drink.
Yeah.
He played for Man United. A lot of these teams have funny names. The one you belong to, you're a fan of, is called Arsenal.
Yes.
And that's because it's by the Woolwich Arsenal?
Yes, so it originated in Woolwich, and that's where the Royal Arsenal was sited, and it carried out armaments, you know, manufacture, really.
And that's why they're called the Gunners, because they made guns.
Yes. One of my favourites is Hartlepool, and they've got a team called the Monkey Hangers. That's their nickname. Or Chimp Choker is often shouted at them as well.
Charming.
I'll tell you why. It's according to local legend, this was during the Napoleonic Wars. So a French ship was wrecked off the coast of Hartlepool, and it's said that the only survivor was a monkey wearing a French uniform to entertain the people on ships with. Not a happy life for the monkey. But on finding the monkey, some locals decided to hold a trial on the beach for it, and they concluded that the monkey was a French spy. It was hanged from the mast of a fishing boat, it said. So it's really not very nice, but you can find
monkeys. It gets worse and worse, this.
All over Hartlepool today. Yeah. Sheffield Wednesday, this is a nicer one. So that was formed in the early 1800s as the Wednesday Cricket Club, because Wednesdays were when they played their matches. And then they established a footballing side, essentially just to keep them fit during the winter months. And then the footballing eventually took over. Tottenham Hotspur, that was formed by grammar school boys from the Bible class at the oldest church in Tottenham. It's in Harringay. It's called All Hallows Church. And they were also members of Hotspur Cricket Club, associated, I think, with Sir Henry Percy, also known as Harry Hotspur. Who lived locally there during the 14th century. So that's how it became Tottenham Hotspur.
Who are the Toffees?
The Toffees at Everton.
Oh, is it because there was a toffee-making company, rather like the Hatters come from whatever that town is, Luton, where they make hats, or used to?
Yes, I think there was a really popular toffee shop called Mother Noblets, or Noblets.
I love it.
Who sold sweets, including the Everton Mint. Yes, and I think that's why they're called the Toffees, which is a nice one. Sunderland and the Mackhams. One belief is that it was a term used by Geordie shipyard workers on the Tyne, because the Mackhams would make the ship to be fitted out in Newcastle. So they would mack 'em and tack 'em, make them and take them. So that's that one. Any others that you would like to know about? There's the Addicks. That's Charlton Athletic. That was a corruption of Haddocks, which was the name of a local fish shop.
I've heard of the Imps, but I didn't know who they are.
Lincoln City. Again, I think that's quite like the monkey hangers. There's a legend relating to that one. Who else? The Trotters, because the pitch was next to a piggery for Bolton Wanderers. And I think they were called the Wanderers because they didn't have a fixed stadium at which to play. I think that's why, but people might correct me on that one. Oh, there's just so many, but I think it all sort of, again, is testimony really to, as I say, to that tribal impulse. You know, you are part of a gang, and having a nickname for that gang is really important.
I would like some other people who are football fans like you are to write into us to find out if the portrait you've given me, the picture you've given me, is remotely accurate.
Okay.
It's a generational thing too as well. I played a little bit of football at school. My recollection of football is when I was a little boy, 5:30 on a Saturday evening, waiting for whatever the next programme was, loving hearing the voice saying, Sunderland 1, Everton 2.
Yes.
Charlton Athletic 3, Lincoln City.
That's like the shipping forecast to me.
Yes.
And also the intonation, so you know from the first rise or fall who's won. It's brilliant. It's an art form.
And I liked the Scottish League. The names of the Scottish teams was lovely.
Yeah.
I liked all that. So if you have recollections of football, if whether you think Susie's got it right, or if they've got queries about the language, or indeed want to correct her in any way for some of the her interpretation of some of the terms, do get in touch.
I'd love to know too whether soccer fans in the US are slightly more reserved, particularly with their language.
I'd love to
know that.
We do have great correspondence, don't we, from across the world?
Do you know what? Also, I just, this sounds a bit pathetic, but I actually shed a tear yesterday because our lovely producer, Lawrence, sent us some of the emails that have been coming in. And there's so many people who've been listening in during lockdown and really, really tough times. They've even been ill themselves, or they've been on their own, or it just for them is a kind of sanctuary. So I would just say it is a sanctuary for me recording this, and to find out that our listeners find it one as well, I was really moved by that. But in case that was too cheesy, one of our lovely purple people, Kevin from Huntingdon, followed on from, do you remember you talked about Barry Cryer's jokes about a joke about covering a cough with a fart?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so he emailed to highlight the difference between a near cough and a far cough. He said, I thought I'd share some sensible advice around the current difficult COVID situation. It's around coughing. If someone is standing less than 1.5 metres from you when they cough, that's called a near cough. You need to tell them to far cough. That helps.
Now, I think that's a clever use of bad language. I like that one.
Yeah.
That's very neat. Well done, Kevin. Thank you. We did a whole episode of silly jokes, didn't we?
We did.
Because of the week that my joke book was published.
Absolutely.
And Ophélie Bédier has sent in a charming one, I think. What do you call a Frenchman wearing sandals? Philippe Fallop. What do you call a Frenchman wearing sandals? Philippe Fallop.
I love that one.
Isn't that good?
That is really good.
And do you know the one, now somebody tweeted this to me, where the ruler twanging competition takes place in France in Dodoing.
That's very good as well. We had one from Andrew Steele as well, who is in Kathmandu and back in lockdown again because cases are spiking there. And he said, here are a couple of name jokes that tickled me. What do you call a woman standing between two goalposts?
What do you call a woman standing between two goalposts?
A net.
Da-doing!
What do you call a woman with a pint of shandy on her head juggling two bottles of ale?
No idea.
Beatrix.
Beatrix. Oh, these really are. They're bad. But the reason they're justified is, I said there is research, and I think there really is, that shows that groaning together is good for us. It sort of increases our empathy and a sense of fellow feeling.
Absolutely.
And here's one, from Andrew Steele, for our mooted double entendre episode. A man walked into a pub and asked the woman behind the bar for a double entendre.
Oh, I know this one.
So she gave him one. Oh, I like that.
Have you not heard that one before?
No. I think it's really brilliant.
It's a good one. It's a famous one.
Thank you, Andrew Steele in Kathmandu. It's amazing to have an international audience.
We do,
because someone's written from Glasgow. Mm-hmm. This is from Christian Healy Ryder. Mm. Since moving from Hampshire to Glasgow a couple of years ago, I must admit thoroughly enjoying Scots words. I cannot understand why they are not more widely used in other countries of the British Isles. For example, Ken, e.g., a dinner, Ken.
Oh, yes.
What's that?
Ken. Yeah, well, actually, that's Germanic influence, that one. So that goes back to the German kennen, meaning to know. And it's related to the words know, and it's also related to can as well. So, yeah, it's Germanic. So very, very old, I would say.
Can I clap your dog? Can I clap your dog? That's it. That's getting the accent right. I apologise to proper Scots people. I do have a little bit of Scotch blood coursing about in my veins. Can I clap your dog? It means may I stroke your dog. It does sound a bit unfortunate, doesn't it?
Oh, clap.
The combination of clapping and dugging.
No idea where that one comes from.
Clap, I suppose, is a version of slap. Can I clap? Can I applaud? I don't know.
It means can I stroke your dog? Let's not clap our dogs. Let's stroke them.
Very good.
My favourite Scottish word, of course, is blatherskite. It's a brilliant one. Blatherskite is somebody who just talks rubbish.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I will be back with you next week.
Boom, boom. Oh, very good.
Susie Dent, it's time for your trio. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I have been delving into, and if you know Mark Forsyth, he wrote a lovely book called The Etymologicon, and he also wrote a book called The Horologicon, and they're full of lovely vocabulary. I'm not always sure that all of these words exist. Sometimes I feel like Mark's having a bit of fun. So I owe these to Mark. Very difficult to find in other dictionaries, but I love the idea of them. So flype is my first one, F-L-Y-P-E. And that's an old English word, he says, meaning to roll up your socks, stockings, leggings or jeggings before putting them on. You probably don't have to do this because I can't imagine you in leggings. But getting leggings over socks is sometimes quite difficult. So you have to flype them.
I like that. Okay. F-L-Y-P-E.
F-L-Y-P-E.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Yes, another one is sprunt.
Oh,
this one is much more up your alley. Sprunt, S-P-R-U-N-T. Scottish, this one, apparently, meaning to chase girls around a haystack after dark.
Oh, come on. He's invented this.
I don't know.
I'm going for a quick sprunt.
Hard to tell. And finally, I absolutely love this one, a biffin. Not what you might think. A biffin, a deep red cooking apple.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and apparently people would often exchange biffins at Christmas time. So, yeah, those are my three today.
They're a lovely little trio. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Harriet.
Harriet who?
Harriet, all my sandwiches.
Groan.
Yeah,
it's good
exactly.
Us.
We've ended on a groan. That's been quite a revelatory week for me. I haven't been to the football match before. I think I don't really need to go. I think I'll just come round to your place. We can talk dirty together. We just swear at each other.
I think swearing I would prefer, if that's all right with you. Thanks for listening, as always. And as I say, thank you for getting in touch because it means a lot. You can, if you like, email purple@somethingelse.com without the G. Something Rhymes with Purple is a Something Else production. It was produced by Lawrence Bassett with additional production from Steve Ackerman, Harriet Wells, Jay Beale, Grace Laker, and I've missed someone out.
Golly, he's not there because he's gone off for a sprunt. Ha ha ha.